The technique was dubbed the Gateway Experience by the secret CIA program, and was essentially described as a training system to bring enhanced strength, focus, and coherence to the amplitude and frequency of brainwave output between the left and right hemispheres that would alter the consciousness, pushing it outside the physical space, escaping restrictions of time and space. Throughout history, resonance has been used as a weapon, much like in the myth of Jericho, where in the final days of the war, the priests blew the shofars and the walls of the city collapsed, allowing the Israelites to successfully conquer the city. In contemporary times, sound-based weapons or devices have been developed for crowd control or riot suppression purposes. These non-lethal weapons, often called sonic weapons or acoustic weapons, use focused sound waves to disorient or incapacitate individuals temporarily. There are several modern techniques that utilize resonance and frequencies to potentially alter mental states in people. Franz Mesmer believed that certain rhythmic movements and sensory stimuli could help align and balance the flow of animal magnetism within the body. Mesmer used a method called passes, where he would make sweeping or rhythmic gestures over the body of the patient. These passes were often accompanied by verbal suggestions and soothing tones. Binaural beats are believed to influence brainwave patterns and potentially induce relaxation, meditation, or other mental states. Brainwave entrainment attempts to synchronize brainwave activity to an external stimulus, such as Byron Geisen's dream machine. Welcome to episode 3 of the Richest Family Podcast, The Gateway Experience, Sonic Warfare and Mesmerism. In this week's podcast, Magnetic Stripper, Greg Coles, and Clay Tantor, that's me, three lifelong Gen X weirdos, explore sonic warfare, hypnotism, and the ability to bypass dimensions for remote viewing using resonant vibrations. So glad you join us. So here we go. Welcome to the Richest Family. I'm Clay Tantor. We've got Clay Tantor, we've got Magnetic Stripper, and Greg Coles. We've been lifelong friends for 20 years talking about this same kind of weird shit, and we're going to do it today. Jim, you've got a disclaimer about the kind of bullshit we talk about.
Oh my God. So this is a mandatory disclaimer that basically states that we can neither confirm nor deny anything that we are about to say. And I sincerely mean that.
No matter how much proof, manufactured or otherwise.
Yes, because no matter what kind of edgelord you happen to be, there is just no way to dig up enough spackle to hold this wall together, you know? So anyways, this perhaps is our most out there show yet.
Yes.
In the sense that the Gateway Experiment, a incredible tome of knowledge gathered by the CIA using taxpayers' money, has perhaps led us into a renaissance of crack pottery.
Well, but this was... There was a motivation, right? I mean, the CIA believed that they could it was a spy program, essentially, right? They believed that they could use what some would be called parapsychological techniques to gain new information. This isn't information that they called it
it was viewing. Attached to remote viewing.
Remote viewing,
yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the thing is, they thought, there's a book called, Something Behind the Iron, Psychic Technology Behind the Iron Curtain or something like that. I would have to look it up in order
I'll try to Google it.
Right. Anyways, so this idea that the Russians have something or that the Chinese had something that we didn't have kind of greenlit a program that really looks like New Age.
MKUltra.
It seriously looks like another couple steps after MKUltra. And the diagrams look like everything that you've seen. Like if you've seen Beyond the Black Rainbow or any, you know, any of the stuff that has like a kind of utopian futurist mad scientist from the 60s or 70s. Basically, that's what the Gateway experience project was all about, including like using binaural beats in order to attempt to synchronize the left and the right brain hemispheres in order to turn the brain into a laser-like focused information gathering apparatus. It was really cybernetics, like parapsychological cybernetics.
So
is what they were going for.
I just threw up a book about this, written by Sheila Ostrander. Well-documented, in-depth book sheds new light on the existence and meaning of paranormal and parapsychological. I think this is really parapsychological. Events in the radical revision of their 1970s investigation of Russian research. And it connects that they offer evidence indicating the Russians have been successful in harnessing psychic energy. And there are references to the thoughts of David Koresh and the 1993 Waco, Texas standoff.
Well, of course it has to be true, Clay, because how else are they going to sell the book? They can't say this is complete speculation and falsehoods.
You know, it's interesting you bring up Waco, because we're talking about, you know, different applications of sonic technology used in an offensive manner.
Exactly.
Sonic warfare, right? Right, and today Trump is getting ready to have his rally in Waco, Texas.
Exactly.
And one of the pictures I loaded was this thing called long-range acoustic something or other, LRAD.
Let's see if we can, the common name for it. Yeah,
and
these are specifically like, you know, when we talk about the Horns of Jericho or
precisely, and the squawk box and these, the brown note and these things that were semi-mythical in the past, and this is something that he actually has even positive uses beyond just like crowd dispersal. It can be used to give a localized information to people like trapped in a mountainside, for instance, you know, who have no radio,
or to relieve constipation.
Well, it is for so well that's actually true, because isn't some of them are very low frequency weapons, and what they do is they jiggle your guts.
They do well. They kill you. That stuff will kill you. That is infrasonic. So you have two spectrums. Infrasonic is your super low frequency oscillations.
Uh-huh. 20
and then
to
ultrasonic
12.
Is your super high frequency. And I was reading on the same, going into a little pop culture reference, a story, I believe it's related to Monica Zaza and a British group Throbbing Gristle from the 70s. They had neighbors that were squatting and decided to use some Chris Carter designed speaker system and oscillator system to both send ultrasonic and infrasonic waves into their neighbor's space, and basically got
so
them
what,
to
they
move
just,
out.
They just built a...
a Geneva Convention...
giant base cabinets.
Yeah, basically. Well, I think that it had maybe even, you know, this is mythical stuff, so who knows exactly. But, you know, base waves are fairly non-directional. Ultrasonics are fairly directional. So maybe some kind of dampening so that it didn't affect them. But they were able to direct the base waves for the infrasonic and then the ultrasonic. Probably some very high-frequency speakers. And they said that it managed to work within a couple of weeks.
Hmm.
The people said, this area is cursed.
When the boys with the cars that go boom drive down the road, you can see it in their windows.
Shaking the windows, yep.
you know, there's no way that's not going to have an effect on your body or eardrums. And so, but isn't, okay, so there's also a debate a little bit about, like, whether the, what they called the Havana syndrome was related to this, right? I mean, whether it was something like a microwave weapon or whether it was actually infrasonics.
Let me bring up a point now where we talk about, like a source of a low frequency wave. There is like something where like you've just got like a massive base cabinet or a jet engine, which just, it's like a large thing that's capable of pushing big amounts of air. But you also can have two higher frequency sources, and it's their interference between each other,
right,
that is creating, right, the low frequency. So you don't have one single driver.
Right.
It's just the wobble between the two lower frequency sources. And this is what I heard of as the earlier crowd control thing. Two vans pulling up at a certain angle to people, and there was a sweet spot. And if you got out of that sweet spot, you weren't affected. But if it's like a street, you know, or a town square, and you know, you want to hold that sweet spot, then you're fucked.
Gotcha. So is that what, I mean, when we talk about the Havana syndrome, do you, what's your perspective? Is that,
well, that might have been
the approach that instead of trying to, they might have multiple sources around that interfered with each other.
Right, like inadvertent examples of the Havana syndromes have been through like air conditioning or heating systems where you just have like two unsecured air shafts on the side of a building wobbling at the same amount, and it's turning the whole building into a tuning fork.
Into a tuning fork.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which, in my opinion, is these large capacity, using a lot of calories to directly create large or low frequency sources.
So let me give this.
Have you guys spent any time in Los Angeles at all?
Not that much, but
not that
bit.
Much. Okay, so something that I noticed when I was living there for a second, I would go into these buildings, which I think these buildings are insanely tall for an area that has seismic vibration, right? And I went into a bank one day to find out what was going on with my banking. And I started getting the craziest dizzy spell, panic attack, and I couldn't figure out what was going on. I mean, I was like wobbling around, almost fell over, and I realized that the building, nobody else seemed to notice it, but the building was actually oscillating at a super low, low frequency. Like there was some kind of seismic activity, and it was causing a resonant vibration inside of the building.
So,
and it affected my inner ears.
Jim, did you know that many buildings actually have sonic transition, like they have sonic dampeners that they
have to,
because there would be that pulse from the air vents, you know, that are all in synchronization. I mean, they're all being pushed by one motor. So, you know, there's a high,
they,
and there's a low.
They install many ton devices on top of large buildings that actually slide. And are
makes sense.
And are intended to be responsive.
Oh, and the pendulums.
Yeah. They have pendulums at the top of the building. And they're intended to keep the building
as the Japanese would call it.
Yeah, that's right. It's actually, it was invented by the Japanese.
So
yeah.
So now we talk about like the transfer of sound mainly through convection, you know, talking about, you know, hearing it through air. Now, one of Desmond Morris's concepts about why human beings don't have fur like the other primates is that we were semi-aquatic in our evolution.
Naked apes?
And, yes, precisely.
The aquatic naked apes?
Yeah, and that we are somehow attuned to receiving sound through conduction. I don't know if you guys have ever like been in any situation where like you've heard music through the water. Like I went to the pool party. totally low tech. Took some old fucking speakers, put them in a garbage can, sunk the garbage can in the pool. Boom! The pool's on fire, man. I mean, not on fire, but I'm just saying, you want to be in it and feel the bass, you know? And this is the 70s. You know, we were listening to like Led Zeppelin or Devo or, you know, no digital anything, right? You know?
Well, the thing that's interesting about this idea of going into a building and feeling the vibrations, or that they actually install devices to make the building de-resonate, right? That's the intention of that, is to de-resonate it, right? Is it's my understanding that in the early days of Tesla, he was building some steam engines, and many of them used weights, and they used, I mean, he was commonly using the concept of flywheels to maintain energy momentum in his systems. And one of those systems was a basically a piston-based generator that he showed at the Columbian Exposition. And when he used it, it actually did the exact opposite of what the Japanese were trying to do, which is it created resonant vibrations in the building and actually did do serious damage.
The Tesla earthquake machine.
Well,
it was, I think we got a picture of it.
Oh, yeah, totally. So,
well, this is what Mark Pauline had. He made his own version of this. And I think this might have been before the feed we were discussing him. But yeah, he had one of these. And I guess there's some speculation as to whether he'd actually got to the point of wrecking this place that he'd demonstrated in, or it was merely the potential for it if he'd left it on.
You know? Right. Okay. So have you guys ever heard this myth that you can build an earthquake, quote unquote, Tesla earthquake oscillator with an imbalanced washing machine
and
weights inside of the basket?
Oh, there's some great YouTube videos of someone chucking a cinder block into an old washing machine. The thing just flips out and wrecks itself. Even a washing machine that doesn't have like all the springs attached properly to the central cable. Like, I had to repair my washing machine once for that very reason.
I just threw one out for that reason.
Yeah. No. They're jumping around, and a lot of times it's just it's enclosed by springs. So when it's spinning, it can move freely. But if it's like solid, if all that movement's being transferred to the floor in your house and fucking it up, you know?
Oh, look at that.
In short, oh, I'm not seeing Tesla's it. Let me look on the Trello. Arrangement is not strictly a forced vibration. Oh, I'm not seeing it.
The best analogy to further understand Nikola
Tesla. Oh, okay, there we go. There's the Tesla machine. Perfect. Yeah, that animation looks great. Yeah, the animation looks really nice. Will oscillate forever at its natural frequency. Yeah, that's sweet. The angle of initial displacement. So now, like, you know, we talk about like the walls of Jericho. You know, I think it's going to be the classic example of like the first use of an infrasound weapon. You know, and
What is the story behind the walls of Jericho? Just to kind of give a context, that's we should probably do that more, which is kind of give a little bit of the backstory on some of these. Like, we didn't do
for
that
people
for
who didn't grow up in the Bible Belt.
Yeah, well, you know, yeah. Even me, I've just got a basic understanding of the story. It's just the Israeli army is trying to attack a walled city. This classic story of siege warfare, you know, and they didn't have catapults or ramming devices, but they had musicians. Oh, that's even better than a ram or a catapult. And they blew these big horns and the walls fell down. Now, was this an example of, you know, once again from our previous show, the Ark of the Covenant with some sort of radiation breaking down whatever the clay connections between the bricks, or is this some sort of ultrasound thing that's getting the walls to resonate and fall apart?
Sure.
No.
Well, the thing that's interesting to me is that. This idea, we're still kind of on the sonic warfare side, which is there's been all kinds of attempts through all of history to use the powers of physics that we have as weapons. And I thought you were talking, Greg, about a Japanese effort in the late 30s, Yamamoto, and trying to make...
Yeah, this is getting later. This was their response to the German and American atomic research. You know, they wanted, because the Germany wasn't giving over their secrets, you know, but they had their own advances in maser technology, and that's what they were trying to develop. You know, a beam that shot microwaves.
This was a super weapon.
Yes. You know, and they certainly got one to work, but you had to stand like less than 20 feet from it and be, you know, and just stand still and let the thing cook you.
In the late 1930s, as Japan was preparing for the war, General Yamamoto was looking for a weapon that could give him an advantage over the United States. For this purpose, he sought out one of the most prominent Japanese physicists, Yojo Ito, which is who I showed a picture of, from the Naval Technological Institute. The magnetron would emit high power beam of very short radio waves that could cause either psychological or physiological problems to enemy soldiers, even death. So now we're in a lower spectrum. We're not kind of like in the audible sound spectrum. We're now starting to move into radio waves.
Well, that's like you see a magnetron in your house. Everybody's got one in their house. It's in a microwave.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, that's what this thing is. It's, you know, that's why I posted those GIFs from the Godzilla movies. You know, it's just a big mounted microwave and, you know, and they're just pointing at you. And, you know, I think it was mainly conceived of for naval battles where they're going to fire it at like a metal ship, which is a great conductor. But, you know, even at ship, at sea, you know, ships move. And I think they were ultimately able to stop it with like a type of like aluminum-based paint, you know, that just reflected it. And it was just like such an easy fix, you know.
Well, you know, this is an interesting segue into something that I was hoping that we were going to get to, which is the idea that the universe itself in its innate physics, like even in, you know, quantum mechanics, is completely based around vibrations. Like you could even say Richard Feynman's diagrams are vibrations. Well,
that's
inside of fields.
That's string theory, right?
So. Well, no, quantum field theory.
Gotcha.
Where there's these different fields that emanate particles, but the particles aren't real. They're just the result of vibrations or excitations in that field. So something that came out of this, because people always go, oh, whatever came out of quantum physics or quantum mechanics that's useful. Well, the laser. So lasers are a very strange phenomenon. In the old ruby laser days, the idea is that you would pump light into like a ruby that had mirroring on it. And what happened that was interesting is that laser light isn't just intense light. Every single wavelength is coherent, which means they stack in like Pringles chips.
Hmm.
Like the waves are actually in phase, because whenever they're emanated by an excited particle, they shoot out the same frequency.
So that's how they're used for measurement.
Frequencies are built into the universe is the bottom line of this example. Mm-hmm. And so you could say that with sound, we're talking about a more macro dynamic of a micro phenomena.
It's like an emergent kind of thing.
It's
that we
an
see.
Emergent
yeah.
phenomena, exactly. Mm-hmm. Which is, and there's some crazy stuff. Like we've been talking primarily about man-made things, but there's a tree frog that goes into trees that have holes in them, and it wants one that has water. It's looking for a hole in the side of the tree that has water, and then it goes in and starts creating a variety of test tones.
It's like sonically interrogating.
That's sweet.
Sonically
That's sweet.
Interrogating the environment, but it's using it as an amplifier because that's how it emanates its mating calls.
Oh, that's wonderful.
But it
has
to have water in order to create essentially speaker dynamics inside of this.
Oh, it uses the tree as a subwoofer, kind of.
That's cool.
Yeah, it creates resonant vibrations inside of its micro environment in order to send out a macro environmental signal.
Well, I'd like to transition the conversation a little bit because we've got a whole nother half, and this kind of is a good segue, in that tones affect us. They affect our brains. They affect how we feel. Like, you know, not just hearing a great song you like that affects you emotionally because the lyrics are written.
But it's stimulating your vagus nerve.
There's actually physiological, like, things that are that go beyond your mental structures of being able that are actually, you know, like on an EEG level or on a, you know, like there's all these things like your delta waves, your gamma waves, your alpha waves of your brain. And so there's like, there was a lot of investigation done with both light frequencies and sound frequencies, everything from Brian Geisen and William S. Burroughs making a dream machine that ran off of, you know, you put it on a phonograph, and I'd love to talk a little bit about that, to, you know, like the mesmerizing and animal magnetism that was, you know, these ideas that that there are states of consciousness that can be affected by that. In fact, I'm going to read a little thing on neural oscillators really quick. All states of consciousness, and this is how hypnotic entrainment works, right? So hypnosis can use sound in this way too. All states of consciousness are created by the act of neurons firing in a network. When a single neuron fires once, it's not a big event. But when a neuron fires in rapid sequence, then it is signaling other neurons with a fine vibration of wave spikes. These neural spikes are the language of consciousness. When two or more neurons fire at the same frequency, they are said to be synchronized. When two areas of the brain are firing in synchrony, there is said to be a coherence between these areas, which means they are most likely engaged in a complex distributed processing task. When neurons are coupled together in a recurrent network, the rapid pulses sent back and forth between them are referred to as oscillations, and these oscillations take the predictable mathematical properties of waves, a wave being any standing oscillation passing through a medium. These standing oscillations, literal waves of energy rippling through the pathways of the cranial salt water, are the field effect of consciousness flowing through the neural network. And so that's where the connection to, you know, the Exorcist 2 videos I want to show.
Nice.
Or binaural beats or this gateway experiment that was done by the CIA kind of starts to come in. So when we go back in time, do either of you know anything about mesmerism and animal magnetism? Can we start with that? Can you guys riff on that?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about French salon culture, because this is what this spawned out of, you know, was this sort of getting together of educated people trying to entertain each other and, you know, sort of like a social atmosphere, as opposed to, like, you know, some kind of heavily ritualized environment, like, you know, most of court life. And so it was an opportunity for people to share ideas. And I'm sure, you know, most of them were this sort of make-believe crazy bullshit that was science at the time. But they knew how to party. That was really what it was about. You know, it wasn't just what we now think of as like a cold discussion of science. You know, it had to fly. You know, they had to get the curls to party and take their bustles off.
That's also how it got intersected into the seance culture and the spiritualist culture.
Yes, this is the salon social event.
Cross-pollinated both the scientific and the spiritualist. And so you had animal magnetism and mesmerism all coming both into the scientific vein and into the spiritualist.
What
side.
Is, you know, when somebody says, I'm mesmerized by that, what is the root of that? Like, why do they use that term, mesmerize?
There's a guy, Anton Mesmer, 1700s, France, who was part of the salon culture. And he had this concept, you know, as people call it, chi. Just there's this basic electronic fluid inside your body that either gives you charisma, strength, intelligence, you know, all the things that make living things go. And they would measure this using L-shaped pieces of wire that now we recognize as part of dowsing. They would also inhale liberal amounts of ether that kind of helped them see these invisible waveforms. Another common practice in these salon parties was the use of moire fabric and projecting light through it and then projecting them onto people's bodies to see the slight postural inconsistencies. So I don't know. I mean, the ether, the crazy light shows, this sounds like a great party. You know, I would have loved to have gone to one of these things, you know.
They were really trying to put it all together because if you think about it, this was also a byproduct of what we now call the Age of Reason. And, you know, it seems like this was just high seas crack pottery. At the same time, if you think about these people trying to make their way out of a demon-infested, superstitious world, these were actually kind of huge steps towards modern modern equivalencies, you know, of medicine, of neuroscientific experimentation. This was at least trying to get to the bottom of how things worked.
Mm-hmm.
Without any preconceptions about how they thought it worked.
What I liked, like, just diverting, talking about that, like, you know, like the truth coming from a concept. Like, a lot of times, like, we think of science now, we're like, oh, okay, we're observing something, and then we're trying to figure out, well, why is that going on? But at a lot of points in the past, someone already had the theory, and then they're gathering fact to sort of support that theory, no matter how implausible it might be. Like, an interesting theory is the fact, or the concept of balance, you know, so above, so below. And one example of that is if you bisect a human brain, the inside limbic system, you have a map of the Mediterranean Ocean. And so people felt that, like, the whole world was literally inside people's head. I mean, once you start going beyond the Mediterranean, it's not working so well. But people are like, oh, shit, there's Italy, there's Greece, what the fuck? You know? And so a lot of Cook's early voyages were these rich people who were, you know, educated in these, you know, kind of early versions of what they considered scientists were like, no, there are these giant continents south of the equator. You go find them. And Cook would crisscross of the Indian Ocean, be like, there's a couple rocks, there's no continent. They're like, no, here's some more money, go look some more. And that was like half his voyages. We're looking for these nonsense continents that didn't exist. And he's like, you know, you're gonna pay me to make these voyages, I'm gonna just keep going.
But back to the idea of sound, or
yeah, sorry, or, I'm digressing,
or like, there's been all kinds of times where people, or brainwaves, more like, is what I'm getting at, that people thought that they could mine they can actually use these kind of techniques, like whether it's using vibrations or using auditory patterns to get you to see things from your past, or, you know, hypnotize you, and so that you can actually see past lives, or you know, this kind of a trick, you know, it was kind of one of the concepts in the movie Exorcist 2, right? I mean, in that, there's like this... doesn't the priest use that technique?
The priest and Reagan. So what's going on there is, it's a fictional movie.
No, it's not true.
It's not... The Exorcist, you know.
Oh, and that's not documentary?
Oh, you mean based on facts?
Yeah. teenage Reagan is having these visions, and she's going to some counseling center, and they've got this machine. It's like a strobe light with some headphones, and two people put it on, and then they're off kilter in rhythm, and then slowly are able to bring it in rhythm and share some sort of mental experience.
Oh, you mean kind of like clocks when you set them on the table, like what do you call them? Metronomes?
Synchronized.
When you put
yes,
them on the table and they all synchronize?
That's the basis behind all of these like harmonious singing things in echoey spaces, is getting the normal rhythms in your body to identify with these outer rhythms, so your identity is with this bigger thing instead of yourself.
Okay, so now this stuff has been used in our present day also, and that's where we get to the Gateway, and we get to Brian Geisen, and we get to William S. Burroughs. So what exactly was the Dream Machine, and why did... Jim, will you talk a little bit about the Dream Machine a little bit? Just because, you actually introduced it to me, and, I'd love to hear just a little bit on that.
I mean, I almost feel like I need to do this in the voice of William Burroughs.
Yeah, please!
Well, I don't know.
Well. So we've come to the subject of the Dream Machine, created by Brian Geisen. I believe this might have come out of one of his adventures into exploring Sufism and ecstatic dancing. So basically, Brian Geisen and William Burroughs were living in France and were constantly looking for methodologies to change consciousness. And they came up with a piece of art. I believe it's more Brian Geisen that designed it, that was slots cut into a cylindrical object, and that was set on a turntable or a motorized table with a light bulb sitting in it, and you would sit next to it with your eyes closed, and the flashing that you would see on the back of your eyelids would synchronize alpha waves. So they're saying that I've seen numbers that say something like 1 in 10,000 people can have seizures from it. And I believe I'm actually one of those people.
Oh, geez.
I have strobing light sensitivity. So I both understand the hypnotic as well as the extreme craziness that can come from it. A lot of people have claimed that it helped them get off of drugs, like narcotics. A lot of people have claimed that it's the, best meditation that they've ever had. Some people say that it's similar to what Nostradamus used to write the quatrains, where he would sit in front of a window and close his eyes, look at the sun, close his eyes and wave his hand with his fingers spread and in front of the window in order to get, strobing. So this is analogous to what we were talking about earlier with binaural beats.
What is
binaural
beats? We were talking a little bit about binaural beats, and I mentioned that I heard a stream of it, but you're like, oh, did you watch it? Listen to it on headphones? And I was like, no. And you're like, well, it won't work. Well, What is the idea behind binaural beats? I mean, it's a brain synchronization thing, right? At a certain frequency, that's a lot like the Dream Machine, is my understanding.
You have to have isolation. The reason why it won't work with speakers is because the speakers are kind of, even when they're really separated,
they're bleeding
still
together.
Directional. There's too much bleed, and so they have to be isolated, one ear to one hemisphere. Yeah.
So it's back to this idea, the same mesmerism, the same kind of hypnosis, where sound
it's looking
or vibration,
for it. The brain wants it.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Well, another thing that I've been experimenting with lately is kind of a layman's version of TM.
Transcendental meditation?
Yeah, which, you know, we have chants. In this case, the chant that you do is just an internal voice. But what I've noticed is that you know, having that kind of synchronization effect and synchronization with breathing, it's basically self-hypnosis is what it is.
Oh, I'm so into that. When I ride my bike, I got this giant 20-watt speaker I put on my bike and play like Giorgio Moroder, Kraftwerk, some like crazy fucking digital shit. And that's what I try to do. I try, you know, generally disco is about 120, 125 beats per minute. I try to match my pedal and heart rate for as long as I can. I mean, you get exhausted after a while. But if you could just be in that moment, you know, where you're just pedaling, the beats are going and the scenery is passing by, you're not moving, everything else is moving.
You just have to watch out for traffic.
Yeah. You gotta be on a trail or something with some padded surroundings. But that's what all these religious experiences are all about, is trying to put themselves in environments where those natural environments are mimicking their internal rhythms. You know, whether it's drumming, dancing. Obviously, you go to some, you know, some crazy rave, man. There's 1,000 people all feeling those bass beats at the same time. And they're all dancing, breathing, and heart beating in synchronized patterns. And that's what all these early religions were trying to do. But, you know, they had an organ and synchronized singing.
Yeah.
Well,
so,
it's interesting. It's interesting, Greg, that description is exactly what the what I'm going to say is the Fraser Clark description of San Francisco's house music scene in the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s. You know, like they were attempting to recapture African, Papua New Guinea, like all these kind of tribal syncratic experiences, is I guess what you could call them.
Yeah.
So
it's just where people. Yes.
Go ahead. I want to draw it back to the gateway because we're almost out of time.
Sure.
And I'm going to put something on the screen. This is an actual drawing as part of. There were all kinds of materials that came out of the Gateway Project, and this is actually something they called the Absolute Infinity. And it goes over the wavelength and energy oscillation between them and segments what different portions of the wavelength do. And these guys thought that by harnessing these techniques, they could actually build super spies. I mean, that was the point of their investigation. So in the top part, in the wavelength of the segmentation of the Absolute Infinity, there's this clicked out portion of oscillating energy transversing intermediate dimensions. And so this is like, they believe this stuff crossed through dimensions and had the ability to pass through time and space.
Look at that Planck's distance.
Yeah.
So what was it, that there's like some different experience at the peaks and the troughs versus the rest of it?
Well, they believe that these systems could actually break through dimensional like confines by using these resonant techniques. And that was the source of the automatic viewing in their estimation. So
Yeah, I think there's this really interesting, it goes pretty damn far, is all I'm saying. It gets pretty fucking hardcore, and within our lifetimes, I mean, I think the automatic viewing program probably ended around the 70s, but that's still in our lifetimes, right?
No, this is 1983.
Yeah, it had digressed to like doing seances and astrology, and they really kind of lost their base of scientific understanding.
But
they were getting funded.
But you see people who come out of that program who seem like pretty straight-laced, pretty put-together people who were in that program from the CIA. They're all old dudes now. But, you know, they put them on these podcasts next to Laszlo and all of the UFO types and, you know, and they are relatively believable. At least they believed
it worked.
They said it worked.
The bottom line is they said it worked.
They said they can't talk about all the stuff that they actually found. They came out of Stanford, a lot of Stanford research in the 60s and 50s. And so I don't fucking know if it's real or not. But sure, they sure did pour a lot of time, energy, and effort into it.
The drawings are cool. They're already on t-shirts, right? That's the main thing. People immediately commented and said, oh my God, we need to make a t-shirt out of this like split hemisphere, you know, human head diagram, you know, past, whatever it is, past, future, left, right. And you're just kind of looking at this and going like, that's a straight up like Clock DVA album cover right there.
Oh yeah, there's some good stuff that came.
You know, Jim, there was an interesting point you brought up when we first started about just the truth and illusion of truth. I was watching Orville the other night. You know, it's a Star Trek spoof by the guy who does Family Guy, and they had in the story was a transition in the Krill's leadership, their alien race, and they have a manufactured news event. And I hit pause, and I go to my daughters, and I'm like, these are the series of photos that were put out of Trump being arrested that were generated by, like, ChatGPT or Midjourney or something.
Oh, I saw those. Those were great.
Oh,
yeah.
Hey,
so here it is, the story happening in real life right now.
Let's do that.
A perfect teaching moment, you know?
Let's do an episode that's completely about manufactured events.
That's
yes.
Great. Okay.
That sounds wonderful.
That's completely about manufacturing.
Well, that's definitely how alternate realities using AI for sure.
We can talk about that, but we should also talk Zion.
False Flags.
What a great show on The Richest Family. I love you guys. I'm so glad.
That was tons of fun. As usual,
you've been part of my life, my whole life. And,
digging it with a shovel.
Yeah, and just really love both of you guys. So, that's it for The Richest Family. Thanks so much for coming, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks for joining us for another amazing episode of The Richest Family. We hope that it made you think about weird stuff, or at least reconsider something you felt like you already knew. You can also watch the video recording of this podcast on YouTube at youtube.com/@ClayTantor or watch a stream live on twitch.tv/ClayTantor most Sundays at 10 a.m. Pacific. Thanks again. Glad you're here, and have a strange and interesting day.